gavel now. This is February 6th. Welcome, everybody. On the agenda today, there are actually three bills, all three of them brought to us by the Secretary of State's Election Division. However, Senate Bill 138 has been pulled from today's agenda. There is a work group happening on that particular bill, so if it's a concern to you, you should see, I don't know where I wrote it down, Mr. Davidson
and
County Clerks Association. So the first bill we're going to consider is Senate Bill 137, so I'm going to open a public hearing and ask Mr. Fred Neal to come forward as our first and so far only witness.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Fred Neal. I'm one of the managers in the State Elections Division and the Voters Pamphlet Supervisor. Senate Bill 137 is in front of you, and you should have a section-by-section summary of the measure. The purpose of this proposal of the Secretary's is to simplify the candidate measure argument filings for state and county voters' pamphlets. The First Amendment in Section 1 to ORS 251.075 would allow photographs of candidates to be up to 4 years old instead of the current 2-year restriction on the age of a photograph. And it also would delete the statutory prohibition against the use of hands, handheld objects, judicial robes, hats, uniforms, or the insignia of any organization in said candidate photographs. Section 2 clarifies the state voter pamphlet requirement that was enacted just last session, that a person's name or title or the name of an organization not be cited in support of a measure argument or a candidate statement or a political party statement unless the person or organization has agreed to that specific verbiage in the statement or of endorsement. Section 3, finally, of the bill would bring the county voters' pamphlets requirements on statements of organization in sync with that 2001 enactment. I'm prepared to answer any questions of the committee.
Fred, I have a couple, actually.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
On the using four-year-old photograph, is that a gift to the baby boomer generation? What's the point here?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It may have been the Grace Peck or Shirley Field memorial enactment. For those of you who know the history of that, that the time frame was shortened to 2 years, and I couldn't tell you when. I think it was sometime in perhaps 20 years ago. But it originally, since 1909, was 5 years of duration, and then about 20 years ago it was switched to 2 years, and it has caused some, especially House candidates, and some of you have been House candidates who do run every 2 years, but that to have to go out and get new portraits if they were using their primary of the previous 2 year election cycle photographs.
Next question. Thank you. Next question. Talk to me about allowing folks to be using judicial robes in a candidate portrait. I'm assuming you had to do that because of the they have to get rid of, you can't pick and choose which categories that you can eliminate for people to wear, i.e. pins, hats, etc., and so you have to eliminate everything. Is that right?
Our purpose in offering you this amendment is for you to make a decision, a choice on whether you want to proscribe anything in a photograph other than saying that it would be a conventional photograph with a plain background showing the face or the head, neck, and shoulders of the candidate.
Thank you. Senator Corcoran.
Skipping over the images that come to mind with the use of hands, I would ask what the handheld objects, that just kind of, for this, I'm just trying to imagine what that might entail.
Tony?
Oh, a gavel.
Gavel.
Oh.
Scepter comes to mind.
Scepter?
It's Thursday.
Does that mean That means Bev gets to wear a tiara again. Is that what you're telling me?
You get near me up at the podium again, and I'm going to hit you with a
I didn't mean to tell that guy about the plastic surgery. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
Any further questions, Senator Corcoran?
Well, I do have one serious question, and that is the clarification in Section 2, the ORS 251-049, clarifying the requirement on the voter pamphlet. I thought we always had to sign a document that said that we could that we would either endorse someone or that we'd endorse a statement.
Yes, and that requirement, Madam Co-chairs Brown and Clarno and Senator Corcoran, Fred Neal again. That requirement had always been the law. In 2001, a legislator had a bill that was enacted that tightened that up somewhat because there was in her opponents in the general election and the candidate's statement some mistaken verbiage as to the endorser's title or associational affiliation. And the endorser, and in many prior to 2001 in this last voters pamphlet cycle, you, the candidate, would write a statement and it would match how you wanted to present it, how you wanted to characterize your endorsers, using some identifying language to show, you know, what their position in the community may be for the reader to understand why you thought it was important to name this person as endorsing you. And all we required before this last 2001 enactment was that the persons signed the endorsement and said that, yes, they were doing it for you, that particular candidate. Since then, we've had to ensure that that once the individual signed the statement of endorsement with a name and title ascribed to them in that statement of endorsement, that the candidate's statement matched that exactly, or that it wouldn't be in. Now, that's not true really of candidate statements, because candidates have a grace period in which to fix the statement of endorsement. If you could get you couldn't change your statement, but you could get the endorser, if you could find them, they weren't in Hawaii, whatever, that to you'd fill out what you'd said in your statement and they could sign the new statement of endorsement. That grace period does not apply to major argument filers. If they don't get it right under this law by the filing deadline with the statement of endorsement that matches exactly, then they don't get to name that person using that title, using the name of that organization in their statement. I did bring copies of our current statement of endorsement form for the committee, so you can see we've tried to instruct major argument filers and candidates to fill in this box exactly the name and the title and the organization that you're going to use in the statement you want printed in the voter's pamphlet, so that then the endorser can see what's in that box and agree to it and sign below the box. This statute clarifies that, but does not change that fairly strict interpretation.
Thank you. Senator Corcoran, anything else?
No.
My left has asked questions. Are there any on my right? Oh, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just maybe more of a question for, I don't know, somebody, but in the laundry list of things that are being proposed to be removed, the judicial role of patent, authority, police, and organizations, you implied that if you remove one of those, you have to remove all of those, but I thought Fred said he did it so we could pick and choose what we may or may not want to do. I just want to make sure which it is.
Mr. Chair, I mean, Senator Beyer, anytime. Have 12 years of calling someone else, Mr. Chair. I'm pretty used to it at this point. We can choose whichever we want. I think the Secretary of State's office was simply putting it forward because of the issue that happened during the campaign, and we can make a choice, assuming that there are votes there to do this, to decide A, C, B, D, or whatever. Okay. So. Senator Burdick, any questions?
I am, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to know what endorsing means. I-N-D-O-R-S-I-N-G. Did you catch that one for readers out there? The serious question is, I can't, if you already have the requirement that the title has to appear, maybe it's just late in the day, but what is Section 2? What problem are we solving there?
Well, it is a little ambiguous now, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick. It says may not print the name of any person or organization in any argument if the name of the person or organization is cited unless the person is endorsed. And you have variations on that. Is it a person with a name? Is it an organization, and is the organization being cited as endorsing? And then the third variation is it the name of a person who has a title in the association? Is the person with that title the endorser, or is the organization, is he empowered or she empowered to cite the endorsement of the organization itself? And that's part of the, I think, the issue from 2001, and that bill was if somebody is cited as being chair of a neighborhood association, so that people in your Senate district understands why that person's name is in your statement, is endorsing you, does that imply that the neighborhood association has endorsed, which normally they're not allowed or wouldn't be doing, is endorsing partisan candidates? And so I think that's why we have laid it out rather expressly in the amendments under Section 2 to 251049.
Madam Chair, that's a follow-up question. Does this include, if someone quotes from a publication, a newspaper article, this includes that?
This, that is, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, that is a standing exemption that is not affected by, was not affected in 2001 and is not affected by this bill.
Okay, so if somebody quoted in a measure argument, the Oregonian said that Joe Schmo thought this was a great ballot measure, and Joe Schmo hadn't signed an endorsement form, that would still be allowed if they provided the proper documentation for the article.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I'm still...
Well, I might clarify in that regard, Senator Burdick, as well. It doesn't have to be that Joe Schmo was printed in the Oregonian saying that he thought that this candidate or this measure was good or bad. It could be a general statement by Joe Schmo about the same subject matter as the ballot measure. If that was a published statement, the measure argument filer may quote it, as long as they cite to the publication and the date of publication.
So under these changes, if they submitted a voter's pamphlet statement that the title or the name was technically in conflict with the exact phrasing on the endorsement form, they still would not be able to use it, right? So they wouldn't be able to, and what's the remedy? I mean, if someone submits their voter's pamphlet statement, what's the remedy?
Well, I don't know if you've worked on ballot measure campaigns. I have in a previous lifetime. It's kind of hard to get those statements of endorsement. It's kind of hard to get the Secretary of State doesn't certify initiatives to the ballot until pretty late in the game. And so you're trying to draft measure arguments and trying to get statements of endorsement to show support for your side, pro or con, on the measure. And you have somebody writing the arguments, and then you have somebody else in the campaign trying to get these statements of endorsement, finding phone numbers, finding fax numbers, et cetera. And then you try to marry those all up at the Secretary of State's office or in room 257 by 5 p.m. on the filing deadline. If they don't marry up, you're out. You don't get to cite that person in your argument.
But what's the remedy? I mean, does the Secretary of State cross off that language in the voter's pamphlet?
We interpret this currently as saying that we may not print that person's name in that measure argument because the endorser signed something that gave herself a different title than what the measure argument filer has put in the statement.
But do you do that in such a way you just take out the name and leave a blank where the name was? So someone's reading along and they say, mm-hmm. and this measure is endorsed by blank.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are we a case in point?
A lot of blanks around the
table. And there's some blankety blanks. A case in point was one of the special elections last fall, one of those elections last year, that there were a number of, I think, educational institutions, associations, and the like, and somebody had signed a statement of endorsement without their name in that box, but they'd signed below, but their name wasn't in the box, just the institution. And so we had to take the name out of the statement.
Okay. Thank you. It could be some very interesting ballot measure things.
You're a lot more entertaining than that other guy from Secretary of State.
Senator Burdick, I think Jim Stenbridge has some information on the word endorsing. Can you give us
Madam Chair, we have run across the word endorse several times in the past several sessions, and it seems to stay there. It seems to be a word that's peculiar to this particular application and has a unique definition, which is very similar to the word endorsement, but it stays, it persists.
Well, Madam Chairman, that's very enlightening. I would suggest that if someone does not comply with this provision, that we use the term outdoors.
Now, this meeting started out. It's like a Neil Young song. It starts out kind of slow and then it trickles off altogether.
Okay, any further discussion on this bill? Thank you very much, Mr. Neal. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 137. For those of you who arrived late to our committee hearing, we are not hearing Senate Bill 138 this afternoon. There is a work group. If you're interested, see our committee staff, and he'll tell you where to go.
He has the authority.
Yes. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 141.
I can give you a summary of that.
A summary would be great.
Senate Bill 141 prohibits undue influence of persons to sign or refrain from signing initiative referendum recall petition. It authorizes a public distribution by candidates, political groups of items less than $1 in value. It limits the amount of food and beverages provided at political gatherings in support or opposition to a candidate, political committee, or measure to $3 per person.
Thank you. Mr. Lindbach has arrived. Please come on up.
Good afternoon. I'm John Lindbach, Director of the Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office. This bill we are proposing because we think that there are a couple of parts of election law. Well, there are many parts of election law, but these two in particular that are quite murky and confusing at times for candidates and campaigns and the public and the Elections Division to follow and for the Elections Division to enforce. The two items in this bill where we make the greatest changes have to do with what I refer to as campaign giveaways and the rules surrounding what sort of food you're allowed to serve and under what circumstances at a campaign fundraiser. Both of these subjects are the subject of many calls to the Elections Division during campaign time, because the state of the current law is the wording is murky and open to interpretation. And what we are hopeful of doing in this particular bill is replacing murky language with what I refer to as a bright line, something that's easier and more understandable for both the candidates and the campaigns to follow and for our division to enforce. So let's take a look for a second at this issue of things of value, or those campaign giveaways. Currently, under current law, you're allowed to do a to provide a giveaway, some sort of item with you know, vote for Joe Smith on it, if it is readily available to the public without charge in your district. And so what that has caused some confusion among campaigns, and we have received complaints from time to time about a campaign. For example, we got a complaint once that a campaign was giving away emery boards, and that was in violation of the undue influence law. And so we actually had to go out in order to resolve that complaint to try and determine whether or not emery boards were available for free in that particular district. And the way this law has developed is we now have a sort of laundry list of items in our campaign finance manual that are acceptable. If you want to go beyond that laundry list, then you have to determine whether or not that item is readily available for free within your district. We'd like something that provides a little brighter line than that. And so what this bill would do would say you're allowed to give away an item with a value of no more than a dollar per item. That is a very clear line to the campaigns, and it would be easier for us to investigate if we get a complaint about it. Then you can, you know, we could simply say to the campaign, show us your receipts, and make a clear determination of whether or not they spent more than a dollar per item. I did check a couple of campaign catalogs on this, and you know, what you can buy for a dollar seems to be fairly modest. But we are not tied to $1. If you want to lower that or raise that, that's fine with us. We just thought that was a good starting point for a committee to look at this bill. The other section has to do, as I said, with food and what can be served at a campaign fundraiser. Currently, the law limits campaigns to providing food and beverages to, quote, incidental refreshments at a campaign fundraiser. And that is a confusing term to people. And the way that it has been interpreted over the years is, if you want to be really safe, and this is the advice our office gives to campaigns, if you want to be really safe, don't serve anything at a campaign fundraiser much beyond coffee and cookies. Otherwise, you could be vulnerable to a complaint. And, of course, it does not allow, the state of the current law does not allow, for example, a candidate in Oregon to say, come on down to the park and meet Senator Corcoran and have a free hot dog and meet him and talk over the issues and something like that.
It would take more than hot dogs to induce someone to talk to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's the state of the law. I mean, they're clearly trying to get at, you know, you could give away free hot dogs or free food and buy a vote. I mean, that was the intent of the law, I think. But it's the way it's been interpreted is that it's just a very unclear law in the way that it's currently written. So what this bill would do would provide a dollar limit, just like we do on the campaign giveaways. And the dollar limit would be $3 per person at a fundraiser. Now, that would open the door for you to have fundraisers where you could say, come on down to the park and have a free such and such, yeah, or a latte, or a hot dog. And it would indeed open the door to that. Now, if you don't want to go that far, lower the limit from $3 down below that. It doesn't matter to us. The important thing to us is that we have some clear language in these bills, something that's just not so confusing to campaigns. The third part of this bill was put there by the by the Legislative Council as a language cleanup in regards to the undue influence on signing an initiative petition. There's no policy change there.
I get to call on me. Does this provision on line 11 on page 2 of the bill, the G essentially, does that cover fundraisers as well?
Your question is, does it cover what as well?
Fundraisers.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Now, if you have a campaign fundraiser and you say it's $100 minimum donation for a fundraiser and you feed everybody a steak dinner, the presumption is that the cost of that steak dinner is covered in part by the minimum by the minimum donation. Mm-hmm. But if you say, come on down for a steak dinner, it's not clear that the cost of the fundraiser or that the food is paid for by the people that attend, then you get into that arena of whether or not the steak dinner constitutes something that's incidental to the event. Follow me?
I do. So let me ask you another question then. What happens if you spend, let's say, if it's not a fundraiser, you say, come meet candidate X at Oaks Park on Saturday, don't say anything about refreshments, you have one person come, and you bought $50 worth of refreshments, are you not then in violation of this? Do you have to advertise?
Yeah, but you didn't advertise for free food, basically. So what you furnished what we advise is, you know, you're pretty safe with coffee and cookies. To the extent that you go beyond that, those are refreshments that may go beyond that incidental to the event category. It's not the total amount that you spent on coffee and cookies, but sort of what you serve.
Okay. All right. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you're running for office and someone has a coffee for you, it's not you and it's not your campaign committee, and you get there and you find some lavish spread that the people, unbeknownst to you probably, have provided, is that covered by this restriction?
Well, you didn't advertise, come to the coffee and get free food. Come to the coffee for Senator Burdick and get free food. But it does sort of enter that murky area of what constitutes incidental to the event. And, you know, we could certainly see in our division somebody potentially filing a complaint saying, you know, this is pretty lavish and goes beyond that provision of law.
But with your $3 per person, if the person having the coffee invites 300 people and provides food for 300 people, which is $900, and then only two people show up, how do you determine the per person?
Well, I mean, it's the value of an individual serving to those people. I don't think there's any way that we could expect campaigns to know exactly how many people are going to show up at an event. So I think it's the value of the individual items that you're serving to those people, not the total amount that you may spend on that event.
Okay, so you'd have to have somebody from the Secretary of State's office come over and determine portion size.
Well, I mean, you'd have to be able to show us that you spent, under this provision, no more than $3 per person on food in those individual servings. Yes, you'd need to be able to demonstrate that.
Okay, I certainly see the value of the dollar, for things of value in section one. But on the other hand, I don't see anything here that would prevent you from just giving away dollar bills. Is there anything that would prevent that? Good point.
You have to give me a second to read this.
It doesn't say money.
A dollar bill is worth a dollar per item. That's an item.
Where's the provision for money?
What provision? I don't know if this means it's a candy parade.
Yes, Senator Burdick, look on line 22 of page 1. A person may not solicit or accept money or other thing of value as an inducement to act, okay, as prohibited by subsection 2 of this section. So money is covered there.
Okay, got it.
So, John, I want to go back to my advertising question.
Mm-hmm.
Sub G didn't have... say that you have to say that it's advertised. Is there a reference back that I'm missing? Or is that tied back into B then? I don't think it is.
Individual.
Is it semicolon? So it's used to say.
Yeah, well, that's good.
In terms of statutory construction.
I have to tell you that I don't understand why you say advertising. You know what you mean? You don't advertise it. So it's a different thing about advertising.
Right. Senator Brown, the issue of advertising only comes up with regards to the incidental portion of the law. So if you don't advertise
or publicize,
right? If you don't publicize, then I mean you're subject to the $3 per person. But if you publicize it, I mean it doesn't matter under this provision whether you publicize it or not. It would allow you to publicize, you know, come on down and have a free hot dog with Senator Brown.
It would.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I knew you would help us out in our quagmire.
Well, I'm something totally different. I have a couple questions.
Okay, fire away.
First of all, when you came to my office, I asked you about the if this would allow candy being thrown at the parade, for instance.
Right.
And because we've always been told that that's not allowed. But yet, as I'm reading now 4B, under current language, as long as it's readily available to the public without charge, it's okay. And I've never been to a parade where the only people who are not throwing candy are little candidates. So candy is readily available to the people in your district free of charge, yet we've always been advised you cannot do that. So can you tell me why that is now under current law without changing this law?
I'd like to ask my staff, because that question hasn't about candy at a parade hasn't come up since I've been here.
Are we really telling people not to throw candy at parades? Do you recall?
No. We don't, Senator Beyer, we don't recollect advising people not to throw candy at parades if it's readily available for free.
That's interesting. Since 1989, I've been told not to throw candy out of my saddlebags from my horse.
I've always told Republicans that.
Yeah. I knew you told me that.
Next question, Senator Beyer.
I mean, that's good, because now we don't have to change the law. We can start throwing candy parade. On the official record.
Yeah.
My next question would be, and when you came and talked to my office, I didn't have a copy of the bill, and I didn't realize your line 21 on page 1, you're saying to add the word sign or refrain from signing an initiative, referendum, or recall petition. And you just made a statement that's not a policy change. I don't see how that cannot be a policy change.
Well, this was language added by the Legislative Council's office in order to make language consistent from one bill to the other. So we didn't add this.
So you didn't ask for line 21 to be added in your office. So no one would have a problem if that was struck.
I didn't have a problem. I mean, it's certainly in the spirit of what Section 1 is. I mean, it's basically not pressuring someone to exercise their voting rights in some way or their participation.
Well, I'm just curious. You said that's not a policy change, and I agree with you. This is a huge policy change. So I'm trying to find out where this language came from. If the Secretary of State's office didn't ask for it, if legislative council just put it in because they thought it was appropriate, normally someone asks for things you put in bills, or how is this not a policy change? But I agree with you. I think this is a huge policy change.
Madam Chair, I might want to ask Mr. Rellinger. Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine, this is prohibited elsewhere in the statutes. I would imagine. That's
I'm not sure that it is.
You seem to be saying that.
I think that's confirmed.
Yeah, because that's probably what it is that this is just an undue influence on them.
Any other thoughts from the Secretary of State's office at this point?
No.
So what you're telling us is that you did not request this change to the statute, that that was something that legislative council put in. It's your understanding that it was a technical fix?
Yes, that was my understanding.
I think we need clarification.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we can find out from the drafter. We can also check other pieces of the statute regarding undue influence.
And it may be we passed legislation last session, and this is simply bringing the statute consistent with other statutory provisions, but we don't know that, so we'll find out.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that this just applies to candidates and not to
the current language.
Yeah, yes. And not to initiative reference.
Okay. Any further questions for this witness? We do have another witness. Thank you, Mr. Lindbach. Okay. Next, I have, Joe Kiesen. Kaiser, okay. Hi, and welcome. It's good to see you.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Joe Kaiser, Democratic Party of Oregon political director. We wanted to just add to this bill that we actually are for this bill. We think this bill is wonderful, partly because it applies a standard that hasn't been applied previously that's been an issue in some of our Democratic campaigns or in campaigns in general concerning what is readily available in a district that's free. Concerning the $1 amount, I think the only concern we have about that is that $1, when you flip through a catalog, for example, a dollar is a pretty low dollar amount at this point, especially if you have to have something shipped. I mean, I think we'd like to see it. We want it to remain obviously very low and small, but we'd rather see it somewhere in the $3 range. And I know that seems very petty, but at the same time, that's, you know, about the cost of having a coffee cup shipped it across from D.C. or whatever. I mean, it's pretty cheap, but at the same time, at a dollar, it may be even prohibitive to get yourself a nail file. So we'd like to see it around $3. But that's our only issue with bill. We think it's a great bill.
Any questions? I was just telling Senator Carnell that she needed to check with the Republican Party and see how much money they wanted to spend. So
that could be like 75.
Thank you. I don't think we have any questions. Thanks for being here today.
And we'll probably put in a rhinestone exception, too, for the Republicans soon.
Is there anybody else who wishes to testify before we go way downhill on Senate Bill 141? Yeah, we have good food at ours. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 141. And I think we're going to be discussing these bills further. If you want to give input to your legislators on this committee, now would be the time to do that on either Senate Bill 137 or 141. And we'll look forward to seeing you hopefully next Tuesday, and Senator Klarna will be at the helm. So have a good weekend, everybody.
Bring Fred Neal back again. He's a lot of fun.
Okay.
I might mention, members, on Tuesday we have a combined meeting with the House Rules Committee right in this room, and the Secretary of State office is going to talk to us about the initiative process currently. So that'll be 3 o'clock Tuesday, same time, same place.
Same station. Okay, station.
When we're going to do, I mean, there's a growing list of new appointees for agency heads.
Senator Beyer, we have two in committee right now. We understand that more are on the way, but so far only two have been submitted to the Senate for confirmation. We have
and I just got the papers on one today, so I'll send them out.
So they are coming.
Yes. Okay. Great. We are adjourned.
I'm assuming sometime we may have her on there as well on Thursday.
Okay.
I told her today just before you came over.
Screaming at them. Okay. But doesn't this provision refer to candidates? That's why we thought that was weird here.
But she needs to hear it.
Okay. And you should talk to her. You should let
Roger
know.
I know. The rest
it doesn't. It does not. It might be in a section under, that applies to candidates.
Ah, right. It's correct.
Language of this
it's undue influence. Okay. Right. Okay. All right. I can just tell him. You can get 3-for-1 right now.
And I'm guessing that there is a provision against mine or someone else. Mr. Kaiser, you mean?
Yes.
You know, I tried to copy over the...